Good morning, Tony.
How are you?
Yes, no, I'm good, thank you. Like same as you, hoping that we can get some clear skies. It's so frustrating. We get the odd night, when it's normally like a big full moon. It's amazing how many times we get a big full moon and a clear sky. What
Yeah.
we need is a good clear sky and no moon, and then we can really get to see
Going to
those
say that, I mean,
lovely skies.
if you are a viewer, a regular viewer of the moon, you will have seen some wonderful shots of recent. There's been some really good moons of late, hasn't there?
Yes, they've been, yeah, it's been very, very stunning. Of course, it's that, the harvest time of year. So the moon is closer to the horizon. We see it for longer. It's lower, looks bigger as a result of that. Of course, it's not, but it looks it. And it's been gorgeous, hasn't it? Rising through the sunsets. Absolutely stunning.
And of
When I've been
course,
driving home from work, I've sort of, I see it every now and then just rising up over the South Downs. And you think, wow, look at that.
and of course, those of an eagle-eyed persuasion will have known or seen last week's supermoon. But don't worry if you missed it. There's one at the beginning of December too, isn't there?
Exactly, because there's three consecutive supermoons. So we had one on the 7th of October. Obviously, we had last week's Beaver Moon, which was the biggest because it was the closest to Earth. But don't despair, because there's another supermoon, and that's going to be on the 4th of December. Now, for any of your listeners who are not quite sure what a supermoon is, this is it's when the moon appears to be a bit bigger and a bit brighter. And that is because it has like an egg-shaped orbit around Earth. So of course, at one point, a couple of points in its orbit, it passes closer to Earth and then it passes further away. So when it passes close to Earth and so the distance can vary. So at its closest, it can be sort of 220,000 miles away or 250,000 miles away, which is, quite a
You've answered
difference.
my next question, you have.
Oh, well,
That's
there you
great.
go.
Well, good
There you
thinking.
go. So if the moon's full, and it is at its closest point to Earth or within 90% of its closest point, which is what we call perigee, that's when we refer to it as a supermoon.
So how do you get two so close together then, if that's the case? Because it's all constantly moving, isn't it?
Yes, that's right. It's just, it happens. We get sort of 12 or 13, obviously, full moons each year. But due to the orientation of the moon's orbit, not every full moon is a supermoon, in the same way that not every full moon is a lunar eclipse. But when it's in the right place at the right time, so when it's approaching a full moon or a full moon and it's at perigee, so at its closest point to Earth, it can appear to be sort of 14% bigger, which is quite a lot, really, isn't it? And 30% brighter than when it would be furthest away from Earth. So, yeah, pretty good. So typically, it would be sort of 7% larger and 15% brighter than an average full moon. So it does make a difference. So that's going to happen again on the 4th of December. So if, if we, get clouded out, how frustrating. But let's keep our fingers crossed that we get clear skies.
Because there's another event. If you apart from being a moon watcher, if you're a planet watcher, well, a bit later on in the month, the moon won't be there, which will give us a good dark sky to, well, I think take a look at Uranus, isn't it?
Yes, and actually, not just Uranus, the planets are all really good in November, Tony. Really, really good. So if you look at Venus, and Venus has been absolutely gorgeous. That rises, well, at the beginning of November, it was rising just before sunrise, about 15 minutes before sunrise. But even in the daylight, Venus has been so visible. I mean, when I've been up really, really early and out in the back field, just the other week, I looked up, and even though it was, we were well into dawn, you'd say it was daylight, but you could still see Venus and you could still see Jupiter too. So Venus is rising just before sunrise, so you need to look east, southeast. Venus looks beautiful. Jupiter, same thing. Now, Jupiter is beginning to rise in the evening sky now, so you need to be looking east, southeast. Jupiter is looking absolutely stunning. And then, of course, we've got Saturn, which is up all night. Uranus, very well placed. It's reaching what we call opposition. So it's opposite us and opposite the sun, which means you can see it all night long. You need to be in a very dark sky area to see it with the naked eye. But with a pair of binoculars, you'll see it resembles something like a 6-magnitude star. So it will have that sort of characteristic green colour. But you will be able to see it in binoculars. And of course, if you've got a telescope, all the better. So you can see Uranus too, and Neptune.
Yeah.
So Neptune's currently located near Saturn, and both of these planets reach their highest position south in the evening sky. So you'll need a pair of binoculars, but you're going to be able to see it. And if you happen to be outside and we have clear skies on the night of the 30th of November, then we've got a 67% waxing gibbous moon, and that's going to sit
in English.
Yes, it's so
gibbous moon.
Gibbous. Yes, so it's the light on the moon is extending sort of more than halfway. So that's what we call it. So a gibbous because it's shaped in. It has like a curve on the left-hand side. Waxing because that brightness is increasing, and 67% of the face of the moon will be lit. And it sits just over two degrees to the north-northwest of the planet Neptune. So on the night of the 30th, in English, so the 30th of November, get your pair of binoculars, find the moon, and then you need to look just over two degrees, which is the width, 2 times the width of your thumb held at arm's length. You need to look that far away from the moon, north-northwest, and that would be Neptune. So all the planets are up, pretty much.
Yeah,
Mercury's hidden by the sun, so it's a little bit difficult.
I was going to talk to you about Mercury because I'm looking at an article that is talking about what you've just been talking about, the giant planets dominating the night sky. But it does mention Mercury switching from evening to morning, and I'm guessing that's just a position changes that will make it appear in the morning rather than the evening. But it also means that it's not quite as clear in the sky, is it?
That's right, yeah. So it's actually an evening planet for most of November, but it's really not well placed after sunset. So it goes into what we call inferior conjunction on the 20th of November. So that means it goes between our planet and the sun. So it effectively disappears in the sunlight, and then it's going to reappear in the morning sky, so it'll start to get better.
Oh, right. Okay. So planet watchers, it's a bit like heaven out there for you at the moment. If you can get the clear skies, you will see an awful lot of stuff up there. What else will we see when the clouds clear?
Well, actually, Tony, I can tell you something that you won't see too well if you're looking through a telescope, particularly when you find Saturn. As I say, it's up all night.
Yeah.
It's going to have what we call a ring plane crossing. And again, to put that simply, Saturn's orbit is just under 30 years. So it takes 30 years to go around the sun. And the sun appears on Saturn's what we call the equatorial plane twice during that orbit. And so when it's at the equinoxes, it appears for us, because it's so far away, it appears to be edge on, which means the rings almost disappear. They don't completely disappear, as did happen. That has happened in the past.
Mm-hmm.
But they will be just about visible. So for anyone who's looking for those magnificent rings of Saturn, because of the angle, you're not going to see them. But it's quite fun to see just how thin the rings can be, because in some places they're only about 30 feet thick. That's hard to say. So you'll find that the rings have almost disappeared, which is quite a sight, because then, you know, you can see things like the largest moons crossing the face of the planet. So it's very good. It's a good time to be looking.
It is. It's mind-boggling, the time scales and the distances that you talk about. And you said that it orbits the sun every 30 years. The average person, 3 times possibly, if you're lucky, in their lifetime will it go round. I mean, you're talking about a scale that is not really comprehensible.
Exactly. And then when you get to the scale of the galaxy, I was giving a talk recently and I was explaining to some people in the audience about the fact, you know, that if you lived on a planet around a star on one side of our galaxy, and you decided just to stay on your planet and do what we would call the grand tour. So sit on your planet and then just wait and go with the planet as it goes around alongside its star, as the star itself goes all the way around the galaxy and back to where you started. And of course, you know, you could do that, Tony, but you're going to need to live about 250 million years, because that's how long it would take that arm of the galaxy to make one complete revolution around the centre of the galaxy itself. That's how immense it is.
It's quite
scary, isn't it?
It is. As I'm going to say, it's quite some mind that can actually work that out.
Yes.
Or is it, of course, computer generated these days?
No, people did work. You know, the astronomers have worked that out, and other incredible things, which are quite mind blowing, aren't they?
And
really.
The other obvious question in all of that, which is completely random from what we've been talking about, is that star that sets off around the universe. How does it know where it started from? How does it get back there? You see, you're into endless questions.
You certainly are. And who's to say? Because, of course, you know, who's going to be around 250 million years from now to actually confirm where that star is? In all likelihood, Tony, it won't return to exactly where it was, because, you know, everything is so fluid out there in the universe, you know, within the galaxy, within the clusters of galaxies, you know, that motion is, in some cases, it's almost sort of clockwork, but on the grander scale, it's almost random in nature, you know, because the distances are so immense.
They are. I would say it's just absolutely phenomenal, really. And I say, trying to wrap my head round it is, it's just another story, isn't it, really? I don't know how you manage it.
Well, I don't always. But that's part of the fun, isn't it? It's part of the fun.
Yeah. What else have we got? We've got some meteor showers coming up, haven't we?
We have. We've got the Leonids, which can be a really, really good meteor shower. Because, Tony, I remember many years ago, late 90s, 1990s it was, and we had what we call a meteor storm, where there were thousands of shooting stars. So anything is possible. But so the Leonids are good. The moon will be out of the way, so you'll have a nice dark sky.
Yeah.
And so the Leonids meteor shower is obviously a large number of shooting stars. Now, what brings that about is because at certain times throughout the year, Earth passes through the debris left over from comets, which are transiting through the solar system and passing out. Now, in November, Earth will pass through the debris left by comet, and it's called 55P Temple Tuttle.
Oh, it's one of those really catchy names, isn't it?
Yeah, really catchy name, yes. It's actually named after two chaps, Ernest Temple and Horace Tuttle. One discovered in 1865 and then 1866. The P stands for periodic, which means a comet with an orbital period of less than 200 years. So Comet Temple Tuttle is one of those. It's got a highly elliptical orbit, so it goes around the sun every 33 years. In fact, that comet is due to return again in 2031. As it passes through, it leaves the debris of its tail behind it. And so at a set time each year, so i.e. November, our planet passes through that leftover material. So all the dirt and the debris slams into our atmosphere, even particles of dust, and they vaporize. So that bright vaporization is is a shooting star.
Yeah.
Those are the shooting stars that we see. And because it's passing through, the planet's passing through so much more material, you can see many more shooting stars.
Yeah.
So it's well worth going outside, taking a look. They're called the Leonids because they radiate from the constellation of Leo, the lion. If you're not sure where that is, just, you know, Google it. It'll show you where to look.
That's this weekend, isn't it? The 16th and 17th of
November.
That's
right, it peaks. Yeah. There's increased activity, really, from the start of November to the start of December, but it does peak 17th, 18th of November.
Yeah, I was going to say, the piece that I'm looking at, when you described all the dust and all the rest of it, the piece that I'm looking at says it can produce impressive, long and colourful fireballs.
Yes, it can. Yes, it can.
That's about true, is it?
Yeah, it is. It also can have some of the fastest meteors, the fastest shooting stars. Mm. And so when you're looking at them, they're zipping through the sky at about 45 miles per second. So that's pretty fast. And that results in these impressive fireballs, which produce these long,
I was going to say, without fireballs, you wouldn't see them, would you?
Yes, you do actually, Tony. You do. If you've got a dark sky, so you need the moon to be out of the way,
and it
will be this year. If you've got a dark sky, you can see these shooting stars zipping all the time. You just need to be looking up.
I mean, they're lit up. What I'm saying is they move so fast, if they weren't lit up, you wouldn't see them.
No, that's right.
Yeah.
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah.
And of course, that's not the only meteor shower, is it? There's another one at the beginning of December.
Yes.
It goes on for most of December. I think it's called the Geminids.
That's right. The Geminids. And they radiate from the constellation of Gemini. And they normally produce very impressive meteor showers too. So again, well worth taking a look.
Yeah, yeah. And of course, looking slightly further forward, I know we're going to have a chat about this one a bit nearer the time, but we've just gone for the clocks going back, so it gets dark quite early. But a big change happens in the back end of December, December the 21st, before Christmas, called the winter solstice, and really quite important, that one.
Yes, that's right, when the sun appears to stand still, and then of course it goes back the other way, so then we've got to get through those long winter months, which are good for astronomers. But then we'll be coming into the spring. So
you mean the hours of daylight will slightly lengthen?
Yeah, that's right. So the sun's pretty low in the sky at the moment, but then it'll start transiting back again.
Yeah, well, at the moment, with the way the weather has been and the gloominess of it all, I think a lot of people are already thinking, can't wait to get out of this.
I know. But you never know. We may get those. Well, we probably will get those beautiful winter nights, you know, and those crisp frosts in the morning, and the stars can look absolutely gorgeous. And of course, you know, we still have the lovely winter constellations returning. Orion looks absolutely gorgeous in the south around about midnight. Oh, I mean, a couple of weeks ago, I just happened to look out due south and Orion was just striding over the trees in the south. And it was just a beautiful crisp night. What we call the seeing, the atmosphere was very, very steady, and the stars looked amazing. The Great Orion Nebula, which is in the sword below the belt of the giant, it was just absolutely gorgeous. Lots to look forward to.
Yeah, exactly. Most of the things we've been talking about, you can see just through a pair of binoculars, can't you?
You can see with naked eye, but if you can see all of that with the naked eye, obviously, but a pair of binoculars shows you more detail. And if you put your binoculars in the direction of the Milky Way, that's when you can see those hundreds of thousands of stars. Absolutely beautiful.
It's a sight on a clear night, isn't it? And the problem is,
certainly is
getting a clear night.
Yes, we will. Positive thinking, we will.
Well, Jane, I think we're about there for now. We'll have another look at some of this stuff, as I say, in December, and get to the winter solstice as well, and some stuff that's coming up, hopefully December, January. But for now, thank you for talking to us today, and we'll catch up with you in a month's time.
Thank you, Tony. A pleasure as always.